Hello, welcome to Raymond Castile's Basement of Horror. In today's episode, we're going to talk about Don Post Studios. But I don't really have a Don Post collection, so how are we going to do that? Aha! I do have a few of the 1998-99 calendar reissue masks, so we can look at those. And I have a couple odds and ends, so we'll make a go of it. And I will take a lot of information from Lee Lambert's History of Don Post Studios, this gigantic book. And this is the first edition. This isn't the longest, thickest this book has ever been. There was a second edition that was, if you can believe it, even thicker, even more pages. Already you can kill someone with this. Honestly, I mean, this would be great for an Agatha Christie type of a mystery where no one knows what the murder weapon is, and it's this book, and maybe it's just sitting on a table the whole time when the detectives are questioning people, and the book is just sitting right there. There's the murder weapon in plain sight. And, you know, some whoop-de-doo detective finally figures it out. But anyway, it's a long, thick, gigantic, heavy book. This is the first edition. I don't, I'm sure you can't get this brand new anymore. You can only get it secondhand. This is not in print. There was an initial run, I think 500 or something like that. And then he did a second edition that was thicker and had a rubber cover with a Frankenstein face on it. I don't know how many years that rubber cover would last before it would get hard and crack and turn to potato chips. But that was the second edition. But I got the first edition. So I ordered this when it was brand new. And I felt like, with that much information, do I really need a second edition? This was all the Don Post history I could stand. It's mostly a picture book. There's text, sure, but it's mostly photos. It's kind of a pictorial history of Don Post. It's a good resource. It's definitely a good resource. And I don't think there's going to be anything better than this coming along anytime soon, if ever. I mean, there might be a documentary, but I don't think we're going to find another book like that. We're also going to look at this calendar, and I'll explain what that is later. First, let's talk about Don Post Studios. Hey, what's going on with my calendar? It's got little marks on it. I don't like that. But that's the thing. Whenever I do this show, I look at things that I probably haven't looked at in a long time, and I notice all the imperfections and issues with them. All right, well, let's start things off with a boring, rambling history from my handwritten notes. And this is, again, is all from this book. Don Post Studios was founded in 1938. Now, you'd think you would find that out. One of the frustrating things about the book, I mean, it's a good resource, but one of the frustrating things, at least about this first edition, is there are a lot of basic data points that are not in it. For instance, the year the company was founded, I couldn't find that anywhere. Certainly it wasn't where it was supposed to be, you know, in the first chapter where it's talking about how the company developed. And I ran into that several times as I was trying to compile this. I had to go to Wikipedia for some things. But there are milestones in the Don Post timeline that the book kind of alludes to what's going on before it and after it, but it doesn't put a pin on it and give you some specific dates. Like, for instance, a date when the company was founded. But from other sources I found out, Don Post Studios was founded in 1938. Don Post Sr. was born in 1902 in Chicago, and in 1934 he began making masks as a hobby. He started taking commissions for events and performances, like plays and comedy shows that required masks. He made several satirical political masks for a nightclub show in Chicago. These were characters like Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Roosevelt, historical characters that were in the news at the time. And this show was a big hit, and it went on tour. And these masks in particular drew a lot of attention. Marshall Fields wanted to carry the masks, so they ordered two sets, and they sold out in an hour. They ordered over 100 more, and they continued selling very well. And this was the start of Don Post Studios. Don Post Sr. hired some help to produce these masks, and he was in business. Then World War II started, and rubber was rationed, along with a lot of other materials that were needed for the war effort. There was a rubber shortage, and a lot of companies that used rubber for their products had to stop producing their goods. And Don Post was one of those companies. In 1947, he reopened the company, but instead of relaunching it in Chicago, he moved Don Post Studios to Los Angeles, California. He wanted to be closer to the movie industry. He started making props for Hollywood movies such as Invasion of the Body Snatchers, From Hell It Came, The Haunted Palace. Then in 1948, he obtained the license from Universal Studios to make the first licensed Frankenstein mask. This was one of the earliest examples of a licensed Universal Monsters retail product. It was a full-size over-the-head mask that came in an illustrated green box. Later, they made a half-head version. Now, I've held one of those boxes in my hand. I actually scanned it and made a replica of it for a display. And later, I made a miniature version of the scan available for people to print out. But for a display, I made a full-size scan of that box. I don't think I've ever seen... I'm not sure if I've seen the mask itself in person. I do know the person, the collector who has the mask or did have the mask that's in this book. I don't remember if I actually saw it in person, but I certainly saw the box. And it was a cool box. Now, speaking of that display, I used to be very active in a group called the Universal Monster Army. And I've talked about them before, and I did an entire episode where I went over the history of the traveling Universal Monster Army toy display, toy museum. And at least 2 years, we had very elaborate Don Post exhibits. And 1 year, Don Post Jr. actually came to the exhibit and looked at it. And that was quite an honor to have Don Post Jr. looking at our exhibit of Don Post masks and the history of Don Post. It was mostly the brainchild of Bobby Beeman. Anything Don Post related in our exhibit was mostly Bobby's vision. He spearheaded the Don Post angle on our exhibit. Our traveling toy museum took many different forms over the years, and each year we tried to emphasize something different, some different type of toy or different era or some different angle on it. And at least twice we emphasized Don Post masks. And when we did that, it was always Bobby that took the reins and devised the Don Post portion of the display. But, you know, it was a group project. So we all took pride in having Don Post Jr. there admiring what we'd done, what we'd put together. And that was a good memory for me. We had many, many good memories. We had Zachary Lee 1 year, a lot of wonderful people who viewed our exhibit and gave us a thumbs up. Now I'm getting ahead of myself because we're still talking about Don Post Sr. Let's go back to the 60s when the period that really makes Don Post Studios important to monster collectors began. Vern Langdon became part owner of Don Post Studios in 1963. Vern Langdon was very into monsters, and he was the one who really led the charge to transition Don Post from a more general mask maker to a monster mask maker. Whereas previously the company had been known for making political satire masks and animal masks, in the 60s, once Vern Langdon came on board, it became mainly a monster mask company. The first major line of monster masks was the Hollywood Horrors line, sculpted by Pat Newman in 1963. And these masks were unique besides being the first licensed series of Universal Monster Masks. They had a zipper in the back. And now today they're very rare. I think there might only be one or two examples in existence, but that was a unique feature that these rubber masks had a zipper in the back. Those were really the precursor to the monster mask that everyone talks about today. Don Post made a line of licensed Munsters TV masks. And then in 1964, they made the reason we're all here, the Universal Horrors line, which later came to be known as the Calendar Masks. Why are they called the Calendar Masks? Because of this calendar. Again, Pat Newman sculpted, I think, all of these masks, but I could be mistaken about that. I think Pat sculpted all of them. There were 10 in the original lineup. Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, Mummy, Mr. Hyde, Creature from the Black Lagoon, the Mole Man, the Phantom, the Hunchback, and the Mad Doctor. But let's talk about this calendar. So you'll hear these masks referred to as the Calendar Masks, the Calendar Series. This is a 1966 calendar, so it was introduced in 1965 for the 66 calendar year. This project, like all the monster projects, was spearheaded by Vern Langdon, and it was published by Prestige Publications. Because there were only 10 characters in the line, they had to add 2 to make 12 months. Don Post had a rental gorilla costume, a full gorilla costume that they would rent out. So they used that costume, the mask and the shoulders from that costume, for one of the months. For another month, they used the Metaluna Mutant. They didn't have a Metaluna Mutant mask at the time, so they went to Universal and got access to the original This Island Earth movie molds. And they cast a mutant head from the original movie mold. So that's what you see in the calendar. It's not a mask sold by Don Post. It's the movie mold. These were, I think, a big success, these calendars. And most of the ones you see today have the calendar part cut out. So most of them have this cut. It's rare to find one intact. This is an intact one. I also have a cut one that's actually in better shape, but I wanted to show you an uncut one. Let's go through this. Since this is such an iconic thing, this is why they're called calendar masks. And those are those marks I was upset about. Like, what are those marks? It has the Wolfman on the front. Talks about all the characters you're going to see in there. There's the Mr. Hyde. Notice his red paint, kind of reddish maroon, whatever that is. Bad sunburn. Keep that in mind later. this feels like it's going to come apart the way I'm bending it. There's a Glenn Strange Frankenstein. I think this is the second version. I want to say that the smooth Frankenstein with smooth skin was the earlier version, but I could be wrong. I think that's the case. I could be mixed up. Here's Karis, the mummy. And that's back when you could actually market a Karis item, when everything didn't have to be Karloff as Imhotep. We haven't had Karis for a long time on the toy shelves. Here's that gorilla. So that wasn't a regular retail mask. This was a rental costume. And I just needed a couple more masks to fill out 12 months, and the gorilla was one of the ones they used. And here's the Wolfman again within the calendar. Pretty cool. Ooh, it's coming apart. Like I said, whenever you touch these things, every time you touch them, something goes wrong. This is all of the masks together. Here's October. Yes, go back to this. Well, now I'm all mixed up with the months, but this is the creature. So these might be out of sequence now. That's the Mad Doctor. He's got the same skin as Mr. Hyde. Speaking of that, here's the Phantom of the Opera. Same maroon skin. What was up with that crazy red skin? Why did they paint him that way? That was kind of weird. Here's Hunchback of Notre Dame. If I can hold him steady. Here's Dracula. A nice green Dracula. Now, like I said, this one had to get pulled because Bela Jr. Objected to it, and so Dom Post pulled it from the lineup. This was before there was any kind of agreement between Lugosi Estate and Universal. There's one of the mole people. And these were all masks that you could buy at the time, except this one, not this one. That is the Metaluna Mutant, obviously, from this island Earth, but that is from the movie mold. That was not a commercially available mask. Dom Post later did make a Metaluna Mutant mask, a couple different ones, but they didn't look like the movie character. They were very distorted and shortened. Here's Wolfman again. They're really getting a lot of mileage out of him. He's in there a third time, so he's on the cover, he's inside, and he's on this page too. I mean, he's one of the coolest looking photos, so I can understand why they kept using him. Now this looks like, are these the Hollywood Horrors, or is this a different line? Because that's not the Universal Horrors that we're looking at, the Color series. These are different. I'm sacrificing my calendar to show you this, because I have to bend it like this, and it's falling apart. There's the Munsters that I told you about. We saw the picture in Lee Lambert's book. Something about space? A space program? I don't know what that's about. Learn all about America's space program. jam-packed with exciting. Oh, so I guess it's a magazine. Space Horizons. Here's the back cover. Oh, this is cool. We got Jigglers. Rubber vampire bat. Now, we might be seeing him again this season, so beware. You might be seeing that again. Not that, though. Rubber spider, rubber bat. These rubber bats were ubiquitous. Even on this show, they might be ubiquitous this season. We're gonna, at least it's my plan, to really emphasize Jigglers this season. We'll see how that goes. But we might have as many as 5 Jiggler episodes. Okay, so we got April, May, June, July, August, September, October. That's too bad that this those pages fell out. Maybe they had already separated and I just didn't realize it because I haven't really looked through it like that in a long time. Like I said, I've got a much nicer one. Nicer condition, but it's got the bottom cut out. Most of them, 90% of the ones you find, have the bottom cut off, the actual calendar part cut off. Because after the year was over, 66, they wanted to keep selling this. Well, how do you sell a calendar after the year's over? You just sell it as a book of monster pictures. So that's why they cut the actual calendar part off, and they just sold it as a monster publication, a bunch of cool monster pictures. Around the same time, Don Post started advertising in Famous Monsters magazine. They had used the Famous Monsters logo in an ad, and then Jim Warren didn't like that. He said that was a trademark, but he'll let bygones be bygones if they would start selling their masks in his magazine. So they did. This is a reprint, so that's not an original, but in every other respect, it's exactly like the original 60s edition. But it is not actually from the 60s, it is a reprint. Just full disclosure. But the contents and everything, even the kind of paper it's on, it's all exactly like the original. And I just happen to have this one handy, which is why I chose this. I don't have a big Famous Monsters collection. I have a few issues. I have the first issue and a few others, mostly because I wanted the Topstone ads. This is an example of a Don Post advertisement in Famous Monsters. Sold out. Yeah, more like pulled from production. And you see that there's a Karloff Frankenstein. Some differences in these between what we saw in the calendar and what's in this ad. Over the course of the 60s and 70s, Don Post added characters like that Karloff Frankenstein, replacing the Glenn Strange Frankenstein. They sculpted different versions of the creature and the mummy and the wolfman. And that's how there came to be what collectors call the version A and the version B of some characters, which becomes important when we talk about the calendar reissues shortly. Don Post Jr. started assuming more and more of the management responsibility of Don Post Studios over the course of the 70s, until Don Post Sr. passed away in 1979, and then his son assumed full control of the company. They continued to make a lot of successful masks and licensed masks. One of their biggest sellers, of course, would be the Star Wars masks. They were one of the few companies that had licensed Star Wars merchandise ready hit stores because, of course, as we all know now, Kenner was late to the game with their action figures. No one knew Star Wars was going to be this big thing. There wasn't a lot of product available, but Dom Post had their rubber and plastic masks ready to ship before any toys were available. And they continued making Star Wars masks all the way through the prequel trilogy, and I guess beyond that even. And they were a mainstay for Dom Post Studios. They continued to... They were one of their bread and butter product lines. The monsters kind of waned until the late 90s, and then Dom Post Studios decided to bring them back. And now this is bringing us to what we're here for, the calendar series. Not the one we just looked at, the calendar reissue series. In 1997, Dom Post Jr. approached Dom Post collector Evil Wilhelm, who's someone I know, and I talked to him a little bit before I did this episode. He approached Evil to be a consultant on a special project to resurrect the 60s calendar masks. So Evil went on to oversee this project, and he brought on another collector, Dante Renta, as a consultant. And they set about trying to recreate the 60s and 70s Universal Monsters masks. Not just the masks that were actually in the calendar, but some of the additional characters and alternate sculpts that were introduced in the late 60s and through the 70s. The process of recreating these masks was difficult. They laser scanned original masks, surviving original masks, and used those scans to create 3D masters that were missing a lot of detail. So from those, they made molds and made clay presses. And from the clay press, they re-sculpted details that had been lost. They used original masks as a guide, and they also used photos of original masks. They tried as best they could to try to match the new sculpts to the old ones. The book is a little confusing about the dates on these. It's my understanding that the first run of these came out in 1998, then the other half came out in 1999, and then they actually produced a few more after that in 2000. So everyone calls them the 98 reissues, but they were 98, 99, 2000. They were out for a few years. And I remember seeing them, and I'm pointing because they're sitting over there off camera. I remember seeing them in brick and mortar stores at the time. And I was not that into Dom Post masks as a collector. I had a few good ones. But even back then, I was already kind of more into Topstone and the lower end masks, the stuff that I had as a kid. I would look at ads, like the Famous Monsters ads, as a child, and I would salivate over those monster mask ads and wish I could have them, but they were way too expensive. I did have my parents and grandparents order Topstone masks out of those ads, and I did get those, but I never got any Dom Post masks. The only time I ever saw a Dom Post mask as a kid was in a magic shop, and they did have magic and joke stores when I was a kid, and I did go to some of those, and I would see the Dom Post masks and other kinds of masks on shelves, and like, oh, what are those things? They don't have those kind of shops anymore. Those were magical places. They were weird, weird little stores run by odd little Willy Wonka characters. I don't know how those shops made money, but I guess there was a big enough business back then for that kind of stuff, novelties and makeup and joke items and rubber masks. They were whimsical little stores. And when I think of Dom Post masks, I think of those novelty stores, joke stores, magic shops. If you wanted some nose putty, you'd go to a shop like that. If you wanted a book on magic, you'd go to a shop like that. If you wanted a joy buzzer, you go to a shop like that. If you wanted weird, esoteric, exotic, strange, risque nuttiness, you would go to a shop like that. They were kind of like the Spencer Gifts of their day, but not a chain. These are mom and pop stores. But they're much more interesting than that. It's not doing them justice. But to try to compare it to something modern, and even Spencer Gifts isn't really modern anymore. I think it's just called Spencer's now, right? But that's the closest thing I can think of to compare them to. They were weird little stores. But that's the only time I ever saw a Dom Post mask in real life when I was a kid. Except for the Star Wars ones. I did see those. So I saw the Star Wars mask, and I saw some of these monsters in magic shops. As a collector, I did have a decent little Dom Post collection for a few years. I focused on the 70s masks, because that was my thing. I grew up in the 70s, and I remember seeing the 70s monster masks. Eric, Timberwolf, B. Garrett Theta, those weird things. Sargoth, those weird masks. That was my Dom Post. That's what I missed the period with. I did see like Frankenstein and Creature. They still had some of those masks. They still had the 70s versions of some of those. But I missed the calendar era or the Universal horrors or the Hollywood horrors. That was before my time. So I didn't even know that happened. My idea of Dom Post would be the 70s masks or the special edition Nosferatu or Facehugger and the acrylic cases. Oh, I love those. To this day, I'd still like to have those. I don't really have a Dom Post collection to put them in at this point, but I still would like to have those. I wanted those as a kid. I still want those. And I've come close to buying those, both the Facehugger and the Nosferatu. There have been several times where I almost pulled the trigger, but just couldn't do it. For one thing, the acrylic cases are always cracked. I hate that. I don't want cracked cases, but it's hard to find them without a crack in the case. But I digress. I did build a little Dom Post collection of some quality masks, pretty good ones. And eventually I just sold it all. I decided I wanted to focus on Topstone, and I sold all the Dom Post stuff. It's kind of like in the 90s when I had a beautiful Mego collection. Mego superheroes. No, it would have been the envy of many a Mego collector today. All boxed, carded, just different variations. Great collection. And then I made the decision to focus on monsters, and I sold or traded all the Mego superheroes. Just within maybe 2 years, they were all gone. And in their place were monsters. And that's kind of what happened with Dom Post. I sold it all, and in its place were Topstones. I made that decision. I'm a Topstone collector, not a Dom Post collector, because I had nothing to offer Dom Post collecting. That territory had already been explored and mapped out by other collectors. There was nothing for me to offer. What was I going to do? Just have like a Me Too collection? And by Me Too, I mean also ran a kind of a second-rate collection that was sort of trying to copy what other collectors had already done. I didn't want a second-rate Dom Post collection. I wanted a first-rate Topstone collection. That was uncharted territory. There were no hardcore Topstone collectors, you know, vintage original Topstones. So that's what I decided to focus on. Excuse me, I just had to take a little pumpkin beer break. I always think of the start of the Halloween season, coinciding with the first bottles of pumpkin beer hitting the local grocery store shelves. When I see the pumpkin beer, then I think it's Halloween. And the second thing would be the Halloween merchandise appearing at Lowe's. The pumpkin beer just showed up at the grocery store, and the Halloween merchandise, the big outdoor displays, showed up at Lowe's. Here's some Lowe's Halloween display merchandise. I don't think you thought you'd see this in a Dom Post video, but you know, we're all over the place. This is what's at Lowe's right now. Some cool stuff. So when you got the Lowe's Halloween merchandise out, and when you've got the pumpkin beer at the grocery store, now it's Halloween. Summer's over, even though summer still has a few weeks to go. In my mind, summer's over. I'm about 24 hours away from my eye surgery. So 24 hours from this moment, I'll be getting ready to go to the hospital. Now, I don't think you're supposed to drink alcohol right before a surgery. Isn't that right? I don't think you're supposed to do that, but I'm going to have a knife in my eyeball in 24 hours. So that's how things are with me right now. Where can I put this? There we go. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, Top Stone. Yeah, I wanted a first-rate Top Stone collection instead of a second-rate Dom Post collection, because there were already so many collectors that had just spectacular Dom Post collections. I could never touch it. And why would I? They've already done it. They've already been the trailblazers. But Top Stone was something that was closer to my heart, because it's what I actually had as a kid, what I actually remembered in childhood. I never had Dom Post. I had Top Stone. And it was something that I could do that no one else had done. There were collectors who had modern pulls from molds made from vintage Top Stone Masters. There were collectors who had those, but no one specialized in vintage Top Stone. Hardcore. They might have had a couple of things, but not a vast collection, which is what I've got. I've got hundreds of vintage Top Stone masks, rubber masks, and vacuform masks, and novelties, and puppets, and vinyl toys, and I have some masters too, the original urethane masters. I am very happy with where I'm at as a Top Stone collector, and I would never feel that way as a Dom Post collector. I would always feel like I was lagging behind, trailing after other people, and just kind of running after them, saying, "Hey, I've got Dom Post too!" Instead of being out in the lead as a Top Stone collector. So that's my personal Dom Post journey. I did keep a few things, including a few of the calendar masks, reissue masks, because those are tied to a memory of actually seeing them in stores. I used to visit Los Angeles like twice a year, and I would see them in stores in Los Angeles. I don't know if I ever saw them in the St. Louis area, but I definitely saw them in Los Angeles. I saw them in brick and mortar actual stores when they were brand new in Los Angeles. I remember going to those stores and seeing them on the shelves and being amazed by them and just thinking they were so cool. And I always thought of those reissues more as toys than masks. And I think that might be kind of deliberate. I think they were marketed, maybe not toys, but they weren't marketed as masks because they're cast thick, so you can't really put them on. You can't wear them, not easily. They're display pieces. They're, I hate to use the word, but they're kind of novelties. They're cool things to own and look at, but they're not truly masks. But that's okay, because a lot of artists' masks, like if you go to Mask Fest, it's full of artist masks. A lot of those are busts, really. They're latex busts, latex foam-filled busts. You can't wear them. They're not meant to be worn. And a lot of things in the modern mask collecting world are really busts or display pieces. Well, let's just one more bit of Don Post, since we mentioned Mask Fest, one more bit of Don Post history. In the 2000s, Don Post Studios became the property of Paper Magic Group. And I word it that way because that's the way it's worded in this book. I guess Paper Magic bought Don Post or acquired it, or I don't know. It says it became the property of Paper Magic. I guess it was Magic. Paper Magic. But Paper Magic was buying up all kinds of things. And Topstone was also sold. So it didn't become the property of Mel Goldberg, and the owners of Topstone sold it to Paper Magic. They made a deal and sold it to Paper Magic. Then in 2012, the Paper Magic Group was sold to Gemmy. I always don't, is it Gemmy or Gemmy? I say Gemmy. I think that's how you pronounce it. G-E-M-M-Y, Gemmy. So Gemmy bought Paper Magic. And with it, Don Post, Topstone, and other companies that Paper Magic Group had acquired. Don Post Studios was very abruptly, unexpectedly shut down in 2012. And I remember it was Mask Fest weekend, and it was a weekend that we had the UMA display. It was a Topstone display, a combination Topstone and Don Post. So Bobby Beeman, who I mentioned earlier, he was handling the Don Post side. I was handling the Topstone side. And that was the final appearance of the UMA display. That was the final one. That was the grand finale. We never did it again. And I remember the Friday evening, Don Post Jr. was supposed to be there. They were supposed to have a table. And everyone was wondering, where's Don Post Jr.? Where's the Don Post stuff? And it was started getting around, almost like a virus spreading, that Don Post had just been shut down. Don Post Jr. wasn't expecting it. The employees weren't expecting it. It was just, you're through. Goodbye. And that's why there wouldn't be a Don Post table, or Don Post Jr. would not be attending that weekend, because the whole world had just fallen on top of him. And everyone was, their faces were this long. Everyone was sad. Everyone was shocked. There was this funeral-like atmosphere. It was heavy. Instead of being, yay, fun, Mask Fest, everyone was like, ugh. Because at that point, everybody knew Don Post Jr. He was coming to the show. He was making friends with everybody. It was personal. It was heavy. It was bad. It was sad. And that was the end of Don Post Studios for a long time, until 2023, when Trick or Treat Studios bought Don Post and Topstone and other IPs from Gemmy. So now Trick or Treat Studios owns the Don Post brand. And they put out several classic Don Post designs. And I think Justin Mabry and the crew at Trick or Treat, I think they re-sculpt most of those. I don't think they're using vintage molds. I think they're re-sculpting them, just like the Topstone reissues that Trick or Treat is doing. Justin is sculpting those, and they look perfect. They look just like the originals. I think re-sculpting it, but doing it faithfully, is the way to do it. And that's the way Don Post did the calendar reissues in 1998. For the most part, they re-sculpted them. Yes, they started with a basis of those scans of the originals, but then they re-sculpted pretty much all the detail on top of those. So let's look finally at a Don Post calendar reissue. Hello! I don't know how this looks on camera. I bet it looks pretty poor, but this is what we got. I can't see exactly what it looks like. At least there's no acetate window or anything to reflect on these, so you should be able to see them pretty clearly. I think we need to do this one at a time. These are obviously creatures. This is creature version A, and this is version B. So this is the original 60s Universal Horrors line creature, and this is the resculpt. I don't know if this is 60s or 70s, but in the 70s, this is the one that would have been available. I don't know when it was introduced, but the ones that I saw as a kid, looking at those ads in the 70s, those creatures would have been this one. I was not born when this creature was introduced, so I never saw that. Let's see. Well, let's put version A down here for the moment. I love these boxes because they make them seem like toys. And there's pros and cons. I guess when I first got each of these, I probably took them out of the box just to inspect them. But since then, they haven't been out of these boxes in 20 plus years, but until recently. And there's a problem with that. I'll tell you what that problem is. But first, let's look at this. Oh my goodness, that's so cute. Look at that. Now, I'm thinking of selling these. In fact, I probably almost certainly will. But by the time you see this episode, they'll be gone. I make a policy of never using this show to promote sales. So if I think I'm going to sell something, I'll shoot the episode before I sell it, obviously. But I won't upload it until after I sell it. So I probably am going to part with these, but by the time you see this, they're gone. So don't contact me. Or unless I decide not to sell them at all. And that's, in that case, don't contact me because I decide not to sell them. I bought a very cool Topstone item, a very expensive Topstone item, and I need to raise some money. And I think this is how I'm going to do it, by letting go of these. So I'm still selling Dawn Post items to finance Topstone items, still after all these years. There's creature B. He's very cute. There's this odd clip art. I mean, it looks like a stock image that they use. There's that blood splatter Universal Monsters logo that was big at the time. The Sideshow Toys had that. And the Sideshow Toys had these colors, the green and purple. So this is very much from that Sideshow era. And let's not forget, like, why did these come out in 98? What was going on? The U.S. Postal stamps, those stamps. We did an entire episode on those stamps. You wouldn't think postage stamps would be so influential to the monsters, but my goodness, those stamps ushered in a whole new era of Universal Monsters popularity. I would never have thought at the time that that would happen, but it did. These are actually vintage masks, I believe. None of these are reissues. These are photos of vintage masks. Some of these, I think, were Evil Wilhelm's masks. Some of them were masks he obtained from various sources. And the book mentions that some of the vintage ones they used were bootlegs, unauthorized pulls from actual Dawn Post molds. People would get access to these molds somehow and pour latex in there and make unauthorized pulls. And it's a good thing they did that, because a lot of masks would be lost if they hadn't done that. And I think the mask picture on the back are a combination of some original vintage ones and some of those bootlegs and from different sources. Let's open this up. See what we got here. But like I was saying, this is very much from the postage stamp era, from the Sideshow era, the Hasbro 12-inch monsters, all that stuff. That's the era these things represent. gosh. Oh. I gotta find out another way to do that. All right. And when they were new, they came in these bags. And there's a, what does this bag say? Mask care and safety. Do not wear mask while driving, smoking, sleeping, swimming. What is this? Elusive Concepts, 1996. Copyright 1996. Elusive Concepts. Distributed by the Paper Magic Group. Made in Mexico. That's weird. Well, anyway, this was the bag it came in. So all these, when they were new, had a bag over them. Apparently an Elusive Concepts bag. Well, at least the little tag that's taped to it is Elusive Concepts. There's the mask. So that is the creature B. I have them stuffed with plastic bags. He's still soft. I thought because these were so thick that they would never turn hard, but then I found, in fact, they do turn hard. And that is a problem. You notice it doesn't have any rust. We'll mention rust in a little bit. I don't think any of mine have rust. I'm anti-rust. My collection is a rust-free zone. Now look at this. See that ridge, those little bumps? That's what happens when you keep them in the box forever. That's the problem. Why does it have that little ridge up there? And those little bumps? Oh, before we talk about that, here's the, come on, let's show them the tag. Ah! It has a little tag, a little blood splatter tag. And inside it's got more blood splatter there. Blood splatter logo from that era. The reason it's got the weird little ridge on it is because this was in it. This fits into the box. This is a little stand. So all these masks are resting on this. And you can see the outline there. That's what made that ridge. And that's why sometimes keeping things mint in the box can be destructive, unfortunately. That's the drawback of being a mint box collector. Like a figure that's on a bubble on a card, the inside of the bubble will rub the paint or create marks or stain the clothes. Stuff like that happens. And that's unfortunate. That doesn't mean you open all your stuff, but as far as these are concerned, I really like the look of these in the box. I mean, I don't really want these out in the open like this. I got a stand. I really like them in the box. I did not know that keeping them on those stands, those cardboard stands, would do that. And I don't know if that'll ever come out, if that'll ever relax, or if that's the way it is from now on. It's not, you know, it's not a tragedy. It's not the end of the world, but I wish it were not there. I wish it were not like that. So now I put those stands behind them. Well, at least on the creatures I do. Okie dokie. I didn't say okay. Can't drink. I didn't say okay. Here's creature A. This was creature B. Oh. Yikes. Now this, so I don't know what was going on with that bag for the other one. This is more like it. This looks like the bag I would expect these things to be in. So I don't know. I mean, that had to have been the one that had said Elusive Concepts. That had to have been the original bag. I didn't swap bags out of there. And Elusive Concepts was a paper magic company, which is also, I think, now owned by Trick or Treat Studios. But I remember these kind of bags. So I don't know what was going on with that other one. This one is, I mean, it's not hard, but it feels a little more rigid. It doesn't quite have, no, it doesn't really have a ridge like that. Luckily, that hasn't happened on this one yet. And now that I've taken that stand out of it, that hopefully will not happen. But it's getting a little stiff. So that's the thing. I don't want to bend it. But you think that these, because they're so thick, that they don't turn hard. But they do. That is the creature A. Now, I hope I didn't mix these up. The one we just saw was creature B. Did I call it creature A? If I did, I made a mistake. It's creature B. And you can see he's not symmetrical. I'm seeing this image reversed, so it's very obvious. But he's not perfectly symmetrical. The creature A was made originally in the 60s using original universal mold elements. So they, just like they did with the mutant, they got creature molds from Universal and used it to make this mask. I think they re-sculpted some of the gills and whatnot, but it originates mostly from the actual creature sculpt used in the movie. And that's why I think the symmetry is not quite right, because it's the case with a lot of movie stuff. It's asymmetrical. But that's part of the charm of it. And that's what makes it look more organic, more like a living thing. And now that everything's digital, we've lost a lot of that. If you look at a original Stormtrooper or Darth Vader helmet, and you really look at it carefully, you'll notice it's not symmetrical at all. And that's what makes it cool. But now, all that stuff would be designed on a computer, and it would all be perfectly symmetrical. But anyway, this is the movie creature elements that you're seeing reflected in the sculpt, actual original movie mold parts. Now for this reissue, I think they did a lot of work on the gills, so I don't know if there's any original detail from the original molds here. I think all this is re-sculpted in the gills. And no ridge on him, thank goodness. You see how this is bent like this? That's from touching the back of the box. A lot of detail there. I mean, it makes you appreciate that original costume. What a character, what a movie monster. For its own time, even now, it's just amazing what they were able to achieve with this in the 50s. And you can look at high-resolution photos of this costume and see how it was made using a lot of different parts. Almost dropped it. A lot of different parts put together. It's not just like one piece. I think the gills were separate parts inserted, and the eyes were goggles behind the mask, and all the different layers were, I think, glued on separately. You know, all the ridges. It's something. It's an amazing achievement. They went all out with this character. Thank goodness they did. They made a classic monster. I don't know, why didn't they do that with every movie monster? Why did they do that? Why did they go so far with this monster, but not every monster? They really treated this almost like a prestige project, which it wasn't, but they treated it like one. I mean, this is, even for today, this is a lot of effort devoted towards a character design. This is like a modern level of character design. Well, there's a reason why the creature is everybody's favorite monster, movie monster. You know, it's either, for most people, it's either Frankenstein, the Karloff Frankenstein monster, or the creature from the Black Lagoon. Everybody loves the creature from the Black Lagoon. If you don't love the creature from the Black Lagoon, something is very wrong with you. He is awesome. And this is like having him right here, because it's so close to the what you see in the movie. Even though there's obviously a lot of resculpting in this reissue project, you know, all the details have been redone, but it still looks like the thing you see in the movie. You can just stare at little details in this. It's interesting. Yeah, I'm changing my mind about selling it, but I gotta raise some money, so this is probably gonna go. But you can't buy it because, like I said, by the time you see this, it's gone. I do not want to use the show as a promotional tool for sales. And once again, you might have noticed there's no rust on it. What do I mean by rust? I mean what you don't see on this mask. That's what I mean. This is probably the cleanest Glenn Strange calendar issue Frankenstein you're ever going to see. Most of these masks over time developed a brown discoloration. And I've heard different explanations for this, but basically I think the consensus is there was some kind of a sealant that Dompo sprayed over these masks. And that sealant turns brown over time. Mine don't have that, for the most part. I don't think they do. I hope they don't. Like I said, you look at these masks, and they're perfect. You look at them again a month later, and they're ruined. That's the way it is with rubber masks. You always have to be on top of them. Foam them if you can. Take good care of them. Keep them out of the light. And these have been kept out of the light. But it still looks like it's rust-free, thank goodness. This is the Mummy version A. This is Glenn Strange Frankenstein. Let's put Mummy down here. Look at Frankie first. What a beautiful mask. This might be my favorite of the line, the Glenn Strange. Look at that guy. Look at him. And if you see a little bit of brown, that's the brown latex underneath showing through. The latex is sort of a tan color. That's not the rust I'm talking about. Believe me, if there were rust on these, you would know it. It would be unambiguous. You'd see it clearly, and I could point it out. Sometimes it works to wash the masks, and then the rust comes off, but then it always comes back. I've heard people peeling it off. I don't know why most of them have rust and some don't. I'm just glad mine don't. Oh, he's still on his stand. Ah. Ooh. Oh, gosh. I don't want to destroy this. That stand is stuck in there pretty good. Come on, get out of there. Ah. You can see it's... I don't know if it's ever been off that stand. That might be the first time it's ever been off that stand. Yeah, I take pretty good care of my toys. And I do think of these as toys. They're not masks. trying to get a good shot for you. Wow. Isn't that something? He's still soft. Look at all that detail. It's controversial, but he might look better than the 60s one. This is the reason I collected these in the first place. It was this mask. I wanted this mask. And then as long as I had this mask, I thought, well, I might as well get other ones. Beautiful hair work between his clamps. He's just lovely, isn't he? And he doesn't really stand up well on his own. Yeah, I don't want to put pressure on the mask. But this is my favorite of the line. This Glenn Strange. As much as I love the creature, I think this is the star of the show. He is beautiful. I hate to let them go, but part of me is worried that if I hang on to them too long, they'll rust, they'll turn hard, stuff will happen, and I'll look back and think, oh, I wish I let them go when they were still minty instead of waiting too long. And I see a little brownishness there. I think that's the color of the latex showing through the paint. I don't think that's rust. See the color of the latex? It's got like a tan color. Particularly on the older masks, a lot of times they would use that rubber color as the color of the character's skin. They wouldn't put that much paint on them. Some vintage Don Post masks are just mostly the raw rubber color. There's not a lot of paint. But if this had rust, it'd be very, it's completely different look. It's dark, icky, yucky brown. And I don't know why some have it and some don't. I've heard different explanations. I don't think anyone really knows. Everyone is kind of guessing. People think they know. They don't really know. I'm going to put him back on there. Every time I handle these, I just get so worried. It feels like they're going to just be destroyed. But it's like that with anything I own. Every time I touch it, it just feels like it's going to self-destruct. I don't like to touch my masks or toys or anything. I just want to just leave them in stasis. Let's look at this one more time. Ah, look at that. Look at that! Isn't he awesome? Ah, he's so beautiful. And just this box, it's so fun. The colors and this, the way it harkens back to that time. If you were a kid then, I don't know what that experience would be like, but as a collector being around during that time, that was something to be a monster collector in the late 90s. Those postage stamps just came out of nowhere. I never expected that to be anything. And I certainly never expected the postage stamps to lead to this new monster craze, this new monster era. Here's the Karis mummy. My tablecloth is going south on me. There's Karis. This is the version A mummy. Version B is still Karis. They're both Karis. Again, no rust. Look at that. Rust-free. My collection is a rust-free zone. No rust allowed. The version B, Karis, that's one I really wish I had gotten. As much as I like this one, the version B looks like an Azrak Hamway mummy head. It looks like a giant Ahai head. They're coming off with that stand in it. Probably first time a stand's ever been removed. But the version B, when they were new, they were yellow, like the Azrak Hamway head. They were all yellow. Now, over time, they've all turned brown. This one was always gray. He's got his tag. Oh, look at him. So this is the version A, like the one you see in the calendar, the 60s one. Version B would be a 70s version. And I don't have that one. I wish I did. But only if it were still yellow. And like I said, they've all turned brown. Everyone I see has turned brown. But when they were new, they were very yellow. Not this. This was always gray. And this has hair, but it's got latex in it to make it look like, you know, like 1,000 years of, or 3,000 years of mud and sand and dirt. I don't think this is Fuller's Earth, though. I think it's the version B that has Fuller's Earth. I could be wrong. I don't feel Fuller's Earth on this. But I think the version B is covered with Fuller's Earth. What is Fuller's Earth? It's like an imitation dirt. What is it actually made of? I'm not sure. I think it's like a rubber or something. And that maybe that's why they turn brown. Maybe it's the rubber Fuller's Earth going bad. But I don't know that Fuller's Earth is made of rubber. I'm just kind of guessing. I don't know what it's made of. I have no idea, really. And they've all got the split in the back, which is odd because they're not really made to be worn. So what was the point of the split? Now, this hair feels so rubbery when you hold it. It feels very rubbery. I want to put this back. The hair feels rubbery. The mask feels rubbery. I mean, you could wear that. There's the bag. This feels more like that Elusive Concepts bag, this one. Okay, let's put the mummy back. These are so nice. I'm thinking, boy, do I really want to sell these? I don't know. But that topstone thing, it was in the 4-digit range. So I gotta sell something, gotta pay for it. There's just not a whole lot I have that I can sell to make that kind of money. So I think these last survivors of my Don Post collection, I think they're gonna go. I hate to do it, but they take up a lot of space. I'll free up a lot of shelf space getting rid of these. And that's shelf space I can use for more topstones. Foam topstones. Let's take another look at him. He's so cool. Boy, he's cool. Here I am behind the masks. I'm the man behind the masks. Now we've got the final two. Mr. Hyde, and Hunchback. We'll save Hunchback for last. Let's look at Mr. Hyde. And there we have that weird red skin tone, just like in the calendar photos. Mr. Hyde had this, the Mad Doctor had this, the Phantom had this. They all had that red, maroon, strange skin color. What was the thinking behind this? I don't know. But I am glad they kept it the calendar color. I do like that. They could have made it more realistic with a natural skin tone, but I'm glad that they went with this 60s calendar color scheme. If these are supposed to be reminiscent of the 60s masks, then that's what they should have done. They made the right choice. Although I've seen these with more natural looking paint jobs, and they do look pretty cool. I don't know if I've ever had him out of that box. I don't think I have. My goodness. Look at that. Yeah, this is the first time I've had most of these out of the box. I think I took the creatures out and the Creature A and maybe Glenn Strange, and that's it. And I don't think I've ever taken the rest of these out. He's still soft. So it's only the Creature B that had that ridge problem from the insert. And if you've watched a lot of Universal movies, you know this basic makeup, some version of this keeps showing up again and again. You can see this kind of design in the Tarantula Mutants. You can see it in a lot of different creatures, Monster on the Campus. This style, well, I don't know if it's the same appliances or if it's just a stylistic thing that keeps coming up again and again, but it seems like a lot of 50s Universal monsters have this kind of ape-man, caveman design, and it looks like there might even be some shared appliances or something, or reused molds or whatever. This is from Abbott and Costello, Meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The only Mr. Hyde movie in the Universal canon. The only Universal Monsters Mr. Hyde is from Abbott and Costello, with Boris Karloff playing Dr. Jekyll. And that's what this design is from. Again, it would be interesting if they had made him more natural flesh tones, like the Hunchback we're going to see. But I think it's fun that he's the color that he is, because that's what the calendar looked like. That's what you saw in the calendar, and these are the calendar reissues. This is the calendar reissue project. I've had too many beers, maybe. I'm slurring already. But this is the calendar reissue project, and if you're going to do that, make them look like the calendar. This is the final one we're going to look at. The Hunchback. I forgot to put Mr. Hyde's bag. I'll put that in there later. But this is the Hunchback. Final one we're going to see today. This actually is the James Cagney Hunchback. It's not Charles Laughton. This is James Cagney's Hunchback from Man of a Thousand Faces. Now, I don't know if officially that's what it's supposed to be. I mean, that's obviously what it is. I don't know if that was technically supposed to be Cheney, but I mean, I say pretty obvious to me that's the James Cagney Hunchback. I mean, I don't know officially what it is, if that's supposed to be, you know, the official story, but that's what it looks like to me. Let me take another look at it, see if I still think that. Oh, the rubber's getting a little stiff, but not hard, but a little stiff. Yeah, that's James Cagney, for sure. That's a James Cagney Hunchback, for sure. From Man of a Thousand Faces. Now, they could have done the hide this way. That would have been cool. But I like that they use the calendar colors. The Hunchback in the calendar looks like this. So they stay true to the 60s calendar. They made him look like the calendar. He's got facial hair. A lot of detail. Nicely painted teeth. This one has its tag. I think one of the creatures is missing the tag. Most of them have their tags. That concludes our look at the calendar reissue series, because that's all I've got. I only got those six. I never had a Wolfman. That was the one that really eluded me. Eluded me, not eluded. It made allusions to me too, I'm sure, but it eluded me. The Wolfman, A or B versions, I could just never get a Wolfman for some reason. All those that I just showed you, I got for basically retail. Most of them were under $100. Half of them were under $50. I think I only paid, I don't know, $30 for Hunchback or Hyde. And I think the Glenn Strange Frankenstein and one of the creatures might have been $100 or $125. But that's it. Now, of course, they go for a lot more than that. But I couldn't get them fast enough back in the day. I should have picked up the pace a little bit, because by the time I got to the Wolfman, the prices had gone up considerably. I was buying maybe two or three a year, and then I said, okay, next one's going to be the Wolfman, and he was $300. I thought, what's going on? I only paid $50, $75, $100 for all for these other ones. Well, he was more money. I could never get one. And that sort of derailed my collecting that line. I think if I just could have gotten a Wolfman, I think I'd have all of them. But I never could get the Wolfman. And then the years passed, and like I said, the Mummy Bee, which was another one I wanted, they all turned brown. I couldn't find a yellow one. And that was another nail in the coffin of trying to collect the whole set. So I never did have the whole set. I thought I should show you this. That is a very old Don Post Frankenstein. And I think I know this design predates the Universal Horrors or the Hollywood Horrors or the Universal Horrors. I think this design predates both of those. And I'm not saying this particular mask does, because they continued making this design for many, many years. But this is one of the older Don Post Frankenstein masks. And the reason I'm holding on to this one, besides the fact he's cute, this was the style that they advertised in Famous Monsters along with the Topstone masks. So it's kind of an honorary top stone because it was advertised alongside the top stone masks in the Captain Company ad. So that's why he's going to stay with me. This other one, I don't know what series this is from. It is Don Post, but I don't know what the name of this series is. Look how distorted that is. That is a weird mask. There's almost nothing to it. Yes, I foamed. That's one of my very earliest foaming jobs when I was learning how to foam masks. And he was basically a flat mask. I tried to give him three dimensions with the way I foamed him, but this is basically a pancake with a nose on it. A flat mask with a eye holes and a nose and fangs. But the three-dimensionality of this is more for me, the way I foamed it. It was basically a flat thing. I think you're supposed to wear it with an elastic, I guess. I don't know how else you could wear it. It's another old one. I don't know exactly what year it's from or what the name of this series of mask was, but it's Don Post, and you don't see it often, if ever, but not that anyone's looking for it. So there's a couple older Don Post masks. Those are vintage Don Post. Not what you usually think of when you think of Don Post. You don't really think of this. You think of the kinds of masks I've been showing you. Well, now it's a few hours closer to my surgery. It takes a long time to shoot these episodes. There's my little jack-o'-lantern. I like this. Oh, Fallen Pumpkin Beer. It's got the... It tastes nice, but it also has a jack-o'-lantern on it, and it's called Pumpkin Beer. I don't drink beer except pumpkin beer. I only drink it around the fall, Halloween time, pumpkin beer, pumpkin ale. The rest of the year, I really don't. It doesn't agree with me, and it's just, I don't like the taste of it, but I like pumpkin. I like pumpkin spice lattes. I like pumpkin bread, pumpkin pie, pumpkin this, pumpkin that. I like pumpkins, and you can see from the shirt I'm wearing, I like pumpkins. I guess that's it. What else can we say? I think we said it all. Not bad. A Don Post video from a guy who doesn't really have a Don Post collection. But I just thought, I mean, I used to. You know, a few years ago, I could have shown you all kinds of things, but they're all gone now. But, you know, I've shown you Ben Cooper and Collegeville and Bayshore, and just you name it, all these different companies. I thought, well, we've got to get Don Post in there. This Halloween season, we just got to do something with Don Post. If you really want to see high-quality Don Post videos, go to Rudy's World. Rudy Muniz, a friend of mine, is a supreme mask collector. He runs the Crimson Ghosts Mask Room on Facebook, and his YouTube channel is Rudy's World. Well, that's the show. Maybe the channel's called Crimson Ghost, but the show's like his version of what I'm doing here. His show is Rudy's World. And go back, look at some of his archival episodes. He's got some great Don Post mask episodes. He's got great episodes on all kinds of companies, but particularly Don Post. He kind of got out of Don Post in more recent years, but if you go back a ways, he's got magnificent Don Post video. So watch those if you really want to see some high quality Don Post content. Not like this rubbish, but really good Don Post videos. A little bit of housekeeping. I started uploading these episodes as podcasts. I know nothing about podcasts, but I have an RSS feed, whatever that is, and I'm going to put them on Apple Podcasts. I don't know what I'm doing, but the reason I'm doing it is because every year I'm fortunate to be nominated for a Rondo for this program, the Rondo Hatton Awards, but it's always in this category called Best Website, and obviously this is not a website. This is a YouTube show. it's essentially a streaming show, but I wouldn't want to be in the streaming category because then I'd be up against Stranger Things or Wednesday or whatever. I'd be slaughtered. But I think out of the available categories, the most appropriate one would be podcasts. So just to try to qualify for that category, I am making the show available as a podcast. So I uploaded some older episodes, just a few, that I thought lent themselves to an audio-only format. And then I'm uploading every new one as a podcast. Is that the ideal way to experience this program? No, because it's too visual, really. But still, it is technically a podcast now. So I'm hoping, if I'm nominated again, that I'll be nominated in the podcast category. Because that's what this is. If you're not going to call it a YouTube show or a streaming show, the next best description would be a podcast. Most of these are at least an hour long, sometimes 2 hours long or more. And I just go on and on and on, talk about a topic that I hope you're interested in. And sometimes I have guests. And it's essentially a podcast on YouTube. So as I learn more about this, I'll promote it a little more and tell you how to find it as a podcast. Right now, I don't know what I'm doing. So when I get my act together, maybe like around the holidays, I'll post information about how you can find the show as a podcast. Why you'd want to listen to it instead of watch it, I don't know. But if you want to experience it that way, you can. At least as of now, as of this season. I hope you continue to have a happy October. I hope you have a happy fall and a happy Halloween. And depending on how I upload these episodes, I think we still have a couple more Halloween-themed episodes to go. So you can, unless I die tomorrow, then this is the series finale. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope this surgery goes well and I can see better and everything's fine. But if I should pass away on the operating table, then this is the series finale. What do you know? The series finale. Hopefully not. Hopefully I will see you again next week with another installment of Basement of Horror. Until then, the one who dies with the most toys is dead.